In the late 80s, Janie Tinkleberg, I've been practicing that all day and it didn't even work. Janie Tinkleberg from Holland, Michigan, had just read a book by 19th century American preacher Charles Sheldon titled In His Steps, What Would Jesus Do? Come now as we stand and sing. We may just do without slides tonight. She was so impressed with that title, In His Steps, What Would Jesus Do? And she was trying to figure out how exactly she would communicate that to a group of teenagers that she knew. In those days, friendship bracelets were very popular. But, you know, it would kind of be awkward to put What Would Jesus Do? On a friendship bracelet. And so she decided to make it an acronym, WWJD. And because the slides messed up, it ruined my whole moment. I had this whole thing I was going to, anyway. Publishers, you know, all these companies caught on. Millions of them were sold as individuals beginning in the late 80s and going into the 90s wore these bracelets that would remind them what to think. What would Jesus do in this situation? And Janie in Holland, Michigan, thought that it was a plus because the acronym, to those who were not familiar with the concept, would ask, hey, what does your bracelet mean? And that would provide an opportunity for those young people perhaps to share with others about Jesus. Of course, there were individuals, as there always are, who dissented against the idea. They countered the notion, claiming that it's not so much what Jesus would do that is important, but what Jesus did. And there's no question that what Jesus did is vitally important, particularly as we consider that there were some things that only Jesus could do. For God so loved the world, I learned the King James, that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life, John 3:16. Jesus is the only one of his kind. There is no one else who could do the salvation, the redemptive work that Jesus did. And so we're grateful for what he has done. And to God be the glory for those things. And yet, what Jesus did certainly prompts us as we try to apply and follow his example to ask the same question. What exactly would Jesus do if he were here with me right now? Or perhaps better stated, what would Jesus have me to do in this situation or that? Paul says, become imitators of me as I imitate Christ. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 1. This year, we're going to officially introduce our theme for the year, the Lord willing, next Sunday morning. But I want us to walk with Jesus. And if you and Bill want to walk with Jesus out at Gene Record Park, you know, throughout the weeknights, you're welcome to do that. But in addition to that, what we're going to do is focus on the Gospels. And let's walk with him, but let's do so with a focus. Turn to Mark 1. And look with me, beginning at verse 16. Mark 1 will become sort of our springboard text for this whole series. In Mark 1, 16, the text says that passing along the Sea of Galilee, he, Jesus, saw Simon and Andrew, the brother of Simon, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And verse 17 says, then Jesus said to them, follow me, and I will make you become fishers of men. I just want to pause right there because honestly, Mark 1:17 is the theme verse. What we're going to do, similar to our Philippians study of 2022, is take, generally speaking, the first Sunday morning of every month, and we'll look at some aspect of walking with Jesus. But particularly, I'm thinking about this Mark 1:17. What was it that Simon and Andrew and all of the others, you know, the 12, what would they observe when they walked with Jesus? And what was it that they observed that would equip them to become fishers of men. Jesus says, if you follow me, you'll become a fisher of men. If I can follow Jesus around through the Gospels, what will I observe? How will watching Jesus' interactions and looking at Jesus' intentionality in his movements, how will all of that equip me to become a fisher of men? A person who exudes Jesus so much so that it catches on with others. A person who is constantly thinking, what would Jesus do? Or what would Jesus have me to do? A person who could say, as Paul could, if you will mimic what I'm doing, then what you will be doing is mimicking or imitating Jesus. That is our very lofty goal as we consider our theme here at Henderson throughout 2023. I'm still getting used to that. It'll take me a while. Walking with Jesus. And to sort of get us ready for that, I thought it might be helpful for us to consider three ways that we can act like Jesus in any situation. So let's zoom all the way out and look at Jesus' earthly ministry. Let's focus on the things that Jesus would have us to do, the things that he taught, but specifically his example in interacting with others. And from that, derive three things that are sure proof, fail safe. If I want to be a person who is a Jesus follower, a Christian, then this is what I will do in any situation. Now, let me give you this disclaimer. I don't believe that these are the only three things that we need to do to act like Jesus in any situation. But I think that these are three of those things. And perhaps you could add to this list two or maybe even seven, and you might have a nice list of 10 things that you could do to act like Jesus. But we'll just give you three tonight. Number one, if I want to act like Jesus in any situation, I need to always tell the truth. Tell the truth. Jesus spoke truth. In fact, when he came, he said, I am the truth. John 14:6. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Sometimes we can convince ourselves that it would actually be more loving not to tell the truth. Have you heard people reason like this? Well, I don't want to hurt somebody's feelings, and actually, if I want to be like Jesus, I'm going to be loving. So I'm just going to bend that a little bit. Or I'm going to be a little deceptive for the purpose of not, you know, hurting someone else. As I look at what Jesus did, I see that Jesus told the truth. In Proverbs 27, verse 6, the wise man said that faithful are the wounds of a friend. Profuse are the kisses of an enemy. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Jesus says, I'll be your friend. He says, you're my friend if you do whatsoever I command you to do. He said, I'm your friend. I'm laying down my life for you. Jesus, as our friend, is willing to shoot straight with us. He's willing to tell us exactly the way that things are. And we see him doing that as he interacted with various individuals throughout the gospel accounts. Whether he was confronting the Pharisees or challenging the Samaritan woman or reinstating the fallen disciple Peter there at the end in the gospel of John, Jesus told the truth. I think about over in Matthew chapter 23, what Jesus says in 37 to 39. You know, the fact that Jesus was a truth teller doesn't mean that he used the truth like a club to bash people over the head. It doesn't mean that he lacked tact. In Matthew 23, 37, Jesus says, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it. How often would I have gathered your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you were not willing. See, your house is left to you desolate. For I tell you, you will not see me again until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Notice the tenderness that Jesus communicates here. I wanted to just gather you to myself. That was the goal all along. And of course, you know, when he speaks of Jerusalem, he's talking specifically of the Jews, and perhaps most especially of the religious establishment of the time, who were the very ringleaders of the movement against Jesus, the very people who should have been the ones who recognized most readily the prophecies that spoke to the Messiah, and the fact that Jesus certainly fit those prophecies, that Jesus thus is the Messiah, and yet they were the ones who felt the most threatened by the authority that Jesus wielded, and as a result, led the charge in their rejection of him. Interestingly, it is these individuals to whom Jesus was the most direct. The people with whom Jesus was the least willing to, shall we say, offer the benefit of the doubt. In other words, these were the people that should have known better. And so the most direct teaching is of Jesus is to these scribes and the Pharisees. In Matthew 23, we have this series of statements, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites." It is the theme of the entire Sermon on the Mount. I think the thesis statement is Matthew 5, verses 20 and 21, where Jesus says, "Unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you cannot enter into the kingdom." And these were individuals who set themselves up as the gatekeepers of the kingdom of God, as the people who said, "Listen, if you want to get to the Father, you have to do it the way that we say, and nobody's as good as we are." Doesn't that tell me something about the humility that I need if I'm going to be a follower of Jesus and a follower of God? But doesn't it also tell me something about the nature of truth? If in leadership or in any other context, we get an ego such that we begin to look down on others and see them as lessers, then we have a problem, and in fact, we have a problem with Jesus. Jesus says, it's not about you. It's about the truth. What does God say? Jesus told the truth every time. And he encouraged us to do the same. In the Sermon on the Mount, in Matthew 5, specifically verse 37, let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil. Vow making, you know, had become basically an elaborate way to wiggle your way out of doing something that you had promised that you would do. It's like failing to read the fine print in the user agreement or in the contract. And the Pharisees would use that in that fashion. They would find ways that they could make certain vows, perhaps even claiming certain vows to God so that they would be relieved in their minds of their obligation, for example, to support widows in their family and other things, those who were in need. And so Jesus says, listen, just always tell the truth. You don't need all the vows. You don't need all of the hubble, you know, all of the uproar with all the things, the hubbleabaloo. What am I trying to say? You don't need all that stuff. Just say yes or no. This is going to be a great year, isn't it? Is this the way we're going to start? The slides don't work. I can't talk. If we walk with Jesus, we'll be fine no matter what happens, right? What I'm trying to say is always tell the truth. And if I want to act like Jesus, I'm always going to tell the truth. That's one surefire way to ensure that I'm acting like Jesus in any situation. All right, number two, I think we can do better going forward. Be compassionate. If I want to be like Jesus, I need to be compassionate. You know, truth can be used like a soothing salve, or it can be used like a jackhammer. And sometimes the challenge, especially for us as Christians, is to know exactly how to apply the truth in a certain situation. That is to say, either as a salve or as a jackhammer or somewhere in between. Jesus had that wisdom. He knew how to do that. So sometimes he let them have it with the truth. A jackhammer was necessary in order to penetrate a stony heart. But other times, Jesus applied the truth like a salve, reaching down and applying gently the salve exactly where it was needed for the individual who was broken by sin. Jesus wasn't afraid to break the stony hearts with the hammer of God's truth, nor was he afraid to bend low and apply that truth to the hurting sinner. And in either case, he acted with compassion. If you do a search in the New Testament for the word compassion, you will find it most often in the Gospels. And specifically, you'll find it, for example, like Matthew 9, verse 35, with reference to the crowds. Jesus often looked at the multitudes with compassion. Matthew 9, 35 says that when Jesus went throughout all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom and healing every disease and every affliction, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. By the way, who was supposed to be their religious guide? On the whole, these are Jews, right? I mean, the religious leadership of the day has abandoned them. And Jesus looks out and he sees, okay, this is the way that the priests and the Levites and the scribes and the Pharisees, this is the way that they're behaving. But look at the wake of destruction that poor leadership has left in tow. Now we've got these multitudes of people, and Jesus says they're just tossed around everywhere, that they don't have any sure footing. And the response of Jesus is compassion. The best definition of compassion that I've ever read is this one. Compassion is your pain in my heart. It's when I look at you and I see the situation that you're in, and then I, in my imagination, step out of my own shoes and place myself in your shoes. And I feel what life is like from your perspective. And then I step out of that and now return into my shoes, and I'm going to treat you the way that I would want you to treat me if I were in that situation. It's your pain in my heart. Jesus comes and he observes these multitudes, these crowds, and he had compassion for them. And then he said this, verse 37, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." Don't we see this kind of compassion playing out time and again for Jesus? He made it clear throughout his ministry that he did not come to heal the sick and to cast out demons and to raise the dead. Sure, he did those things, but that wasn't the primary purpose for the incarnation. That's not why Jesus came. The focus is on Jesus's, of course, atoning sacrifice on the cross. Ultimately, his resurrection, but in the process of all of that and leading up to that, the teaching with regard to the kingdom, the focus upon doing the will of the Father and sharing that focus with others. When Jesus says, it says of Jesus that he had compassion on the multitudes, the way that Jesus activates the disciples to meet the needs of these people who are in this pain for which Jesus has compassion is through the teaching of the Word. And so the compassion leads to a teaching, a reaching out to other people. Now sometimes in order to have the opportunity to share that message of truth, the alleviation of a physical need was first required. It's getting late. This multitude's been out here listening to Jesus all day, and now it's dinner time. Lord, don't you think we ought to send them away so they can go find something to eat? No, I think you ought to feed them. How are we supposed to do that? Even if we had that much money, I mean, we would need a lot more money to be able to buy enough food for all of these folks who are here. Jesus says, well, what do you have? Well, we 5 loaves and 2 fish. What does it mean to be compassionate in our time? What would Jesus do now? in response to that feeling of compassion that he has for others. There's some folks who are just misguided, right? They may be searching for something that they haven't found yet in terms of the truth. They may be sincere in their beliefs, but those beliefs are not what the truth teaches. It's not Jesus' way. Shouldn't we respond to those people with compassion? Wouldn't you want to know if you were on a path that you thought was the right one but actually wasn't? What about these folks over here that are in need? Maybe they're not thinking a lot about eternity right now because they're not really sure where the next meal is going to come from. Perhaps they need some guidance in terms of their finances and things like that because they're just spending their money on all the wrong things. Maybe the past that they have, whether it's circumstances with regard to relationships that they've had or currently have, or maybe it's a past in terms of bad decisions that have been made on their part. But for whatever the circumstances, here are people that seem to be in this cycle that they cannot break. They're living paycheck to paycheck if they have one. How can I look on those folks with compassion? Yeah, but people take advantage of, okay, how can I look on those folks with compassion? And use the funds that I have, or use the funds that we have as a church in the best possible way. I don't want to waste money on folks. I don't want to give it to somebody that I know is going to misuse it. But how can I do what I can do, giving as much benefit of the doubt as I possibly can, to be compassionate? If I want to be like Jesus, it's never wrong to be compassionate. There's never an inappropriate opportunity to show compassion with another person. Aren't you thankful for the compassion that God has shown to you? In Luke 15, when Jesus tells that story about that lost boy, the one who ran away, who finally came to himself and had this whole speech that he had written out and he was going to share with his dad when he finally got home, begging him, "Father, will you just make me like one of your hired servants? I know I don't belong in the family anymore. I know I don't need to be a son, but if you'll just let me be one of your servants here." And in Luke 15, verse 20, the story that Jesus tells, just a story, right? But here's what Jesus says. The father, when he saw him, had compassion on him. We've talked about folks who are sincere but misguided. We've talked about folks who are in need in terms of physical needs. What about the individuals who were wayward? Who were among us in these pews at one point in the past, but for whatever reason have fallen away. They're not with us anymore. Maybe they're disinterested. And how do we interact with those people? What are we doing to try and compassionately, gently, tenderly bring them back? Are there moments when a stony heart needs a hammer to penetrate it? Sure. Are there other moments when maybe a tender salve is needed right in just the exact location to try and ease some wounds and help to mend things that were broken? Either way, it's the same truth that we're using for these people, and we're following Jesus by being compassionate. Number three, if I want to act like Jesus in any situation, then I need to be willing to give of myself. To give of myself. Jesus was sacrificial, wasn't he? Jesus did not insist on his own way, did he? Somebody said, well, Jesus said, no man comes to the Father except through me. Absolutely, right. But when Jesus was on the cross, did he insist on his own way? The night before in the Garden of Gethsemane, did he insist on his own way? When Jesus was surrounded by individuals, rather than just going away and leaving them high and dry, did he insist on his own? No. He's a sacrificial giver. And in Philippians chapter 2, Paul says that we're supposed to be like that. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, Philippians 2:5 says. A self-renunciation with the view of helping others. Well, we can do this in a variety of ways. It's not always on a grand scale. Sometimes it just looks like I'm willing to give up the pew I usually sit in, the parking place I usually occupy. Sometimes it looks like I've got $5 to spare, 10, 20, 25, 30, 50. In fact, I may or may not even miss it. Sometimes it looks like listening for 5 minutes to a poorly constructed story told by a tender child who just wants a little attention for just a minute. Sometimes it looks like giving my resources so someone else can have their needs met. Jesus, though he was God, chose not to cling tightly to that position, but instead gave of himself, becoming obedient to. All right, this is the creator of the universe we're talking about, who chose to become obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross, Philippians chapter 2 says. And in fact, when he spoke of that, he said it like this. John chapter 10, verse 11. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. And then in John 10, 16. I have other sheep that are not of this fold. Remember, Jesus is talking initially to a Jewish audience. And I think the other sheep, not of this fold, are referring to the Gentiles. Of course, that's the plan of the gospel all along. Jesus was laser focused on Israel when he was on earth, and he made that very clear. But he also made it just as clear right before his ascension that the apostles were to take that message to Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria and to the uttermost parts of the earth, Acts chapter 1, verse 8. So the plan all along was that the gospel would be a message that was for everyone. And right here, Jesus even hints at that. I've got other sheep who are not a part of this fold. I must bring them also, and they'll listen to my voice so that there will be one flock and one shepherd. Notice that what they have in common is that they both listen to Jesus, and so they're united in that way. For this reason, the Father loves me, he continues, because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. Listen to this. No one takes it from me. I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down. I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father. Jesus says, I'm in complete control of what I'm doing. I chose to lay down my life for you. I chose to give of myself. No, not give of myself, to give myself for you. And doesn't Jesus teach us with the whole foot washing thing? You know, he says in that context, what is it, John 13? What I'm doing for you as an example. Jesus isn't, it's not like the Lord's Supper where Jesus was saying, okay, I'm doing this, and now you're to do this exact thing if you're going to be followers of me. No, he says, I'm giving you an example here. Be willing to serve other people. Be willing to serve one another. Jesus washed Peter's feet. Of course, you know Peter objected. If I don't do this, then you're not one of mine. Well, in that case, Lord, I'll take a whole bath. You know, it doesn't just have to be the feet. But of course, he knew it wasn't long after that that Peter would deny him, not once, not twice, but three times. Jesus washed Judas's feet, knowing the things that were going to transpire. How can I serve like that? Maybe it'll look like physically washing feet. I don't know, but in all likelihood, it probably won't. But how can I serve sacrificially and in a way that is without partiality? How can I show kindness to the person who has wronged me or who I feel could wrong me? How can I show kindness to someone who is altogether different from me? If I want to act like Jesus in any situation, One great way to do that is to always choose to be giving. These are three ways. I told you this list is not exhaustive. We didn't intend for it to be. But if we're honest this evening, or maybe I should better say if I'm honest, I think I'd have to admit that sometimes I don't feel like I have to act like Jesus to certain people. You ever felt that way? There are some folks, it doesn't matter how I treat them. After all, we're probably, you know, what are the chances that I'm going to run into the cashier at Walmart all that often? What are the chances that the person on the road who's driving in a way that I wish he or she wasn't, what are the chances we're ever going to meet anywhere where it's going to be embarrassing? See, we build up these contexts in our minds that aren't always true. In fact, they're absolutely not. Where we think, well, I don't have to do this or that. Maybe it's because there's no one around who's going to hold me accountable for the way that I acted. Jesus says in Luke chapter 10 that this is a problem if I have an attitude like this. I referenced it this morning. The question that the expert of the law asked Jesus in Luke 10:25 was, "Who is my neighbor?" That was after, of course, this lawyer, this expert in the law, has just recited to Jesus what the Jews consider to be the greatest of all the commands. By the way, something that Jesus affirms, even in Luke chapter 10. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. Absolutely, Jesus says. You do this and you'll live. Yeah, but who's my neighbor? And you know the story that Jesus tells about this Samaritan whom we call good, and he was. But at the end of that, Jesus asks the question, all right, which one of those men, the Samaritan, the priest, or the Levite, was a neighbor to the man who had fallen among thieves and was left for dead? And we noted this morning, did you notice how Jesus flipped the script? The question that the lawyer asked was, who is my neighbor? But the question that Jesus asked was, to whom can I be neighborly? Who can I show love to? And that's the point. I think we're going to be challenged. I know I will be this year as we walk with Jesus to think about our neighbors, to think about how we can become fishers of men, and to understand that at least in part, that will certainly involve telling the truth with compassion. And yes, being an individual who gives of ourselves to others. Are you walking with Jesus tonight? We'd love to assist you in some way if we can. Maybe you're ready to put on Christ in baptism. Maybe you have questions about that you'd like us to sit down sometime and answer together from God's Word. Perhaps you have another need this evening. Maybe you need prayers. We'd love to assist you if we can stand.